This week on the Edible Valley Podcast, we're talking to Greg Wood of Hollywood Oysters about our favorite bivalve.
Welcome to the Edible Valley Podcast. I'm Blaine Prose.
And we would like you to join with us on our ongoing adventure exploring our Edible Valley. I am Jonathan Fraser.
We're pleased to have Greg Wood of Hollywood Oysters in the studio. Welcome, Greg.
How you doing?
Good. Good to see you.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It has, yeah. Back to the Fanny Bay oyster days. I worked in the plant and you were bobbing around there all the time, picking up nets and bags and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you out on the water today?
Yeah, it was really hot. Half of our farm's closed due to the heat, but we're managing.
Yeah. So you have beach leases and raft leases?
Yeah, when Holly and I first met, we worked at Fanny Bay Oysters, where we met you. Fanny Bay was a big part of the community. Sorry, I can't remember the question.
I was just asking you about your leases.
Yeah, the leases I bought when I was a kid. So, we actually lived on the property at Fanny Bay and saved our money, didn't pay rent for a while. And Holly and I bought our first farm like when we were 18. And then, so we have a raft lease and a beach lease, but they're both in co-ops and they're, they're not fully owned by us. They're shared by other farmers,
right.
which we really like that.
Yeah.
We don't have to pay the taxes that everybody else pays, and it's kind of a neat atmosphere to be in a co-op.
Right.
Cool. Mm-hmm. How many people are in your co-op?
We have a Sand Dollar lease, which is a beach co-op, and there's probably 10 of us there, and then there's another roughly 10 at the raft lease. So, if something happens, we all pitch in together to fix it. Like we had a big storm when the Stanley Park lost a lot of the trees, fell down. Then all our rafts, 40 rafts floated away.
Oh, geez.
So we had a huge mess to pick up, and we all pitched in to put it back together. So something like that would be incredibly difficult if you had to do it on your own. So.
No kidding.
Yeah. So you do more than just farming the oysters. You're selling them as well.
We started selling our own product and the Hollywood brand during the Olympics. So at the same time, coincidentally, Taylor Shellfish bought Fanny Bay Oysters out and felt like a good time for a change. So Holly worked at Fanny Bay Oysters for 13 years up in the office with Sharon. And so we thought, if there's no better time than during the Olympics when there's people everywhere. And so we went up to Whistler and really dominated that area. So we're still up there selling oysters to James at Roxy and Barefoot Bistro. And that's sort of where our name started from up there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how many years have you been in the oyster business?
I started when I was a kid, met Holly at Fanny Bay Oysters, working part-time just to make some money, and then went to college, did a bunch of stuff, and then I've been doing it all my life, actually. Yeah. Forever. But I like that, it's interesting still to me. I have a passion for it. Like every year that goes by, I enjoy it more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Something noble about growing food, and you get to be on the water and be in the environment. And
yeah, I was never a fisherman, so I was trying to figure out what could I do to stay on the island. That was a really important question for me when I was younger. Like, you know how hard it is to make a living in Vancouver Island, and you sort of have to create your own job.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw an opportunity. Looking at Max Oysters and Fanny Bay Oysters, there was something there that I knew, anybody that can employ 50 people, there's something in it that I needed to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just kept at it. Just kept learning and growing.
So can you tell us a little bit about your oysters? What makes them special?
Well, my mentor is Keith Reed, and he grows the Coushie oyster.
So right.
It's a very high-end oyster.
Nice flavor to it.
Yeah, it's as a farmer, that's something that you really want to work towards, is having a high-quality product. So I bought a tumbler 5 years ago off of Keith, something that was just sitting in his backyard. And so we tumble ours not as often, but we tumble them to prune them and give them a deeper cup. So we're doing that every day, like that's what I was doing today. And so you do that to size them. The smaller oysters will fall through the screens that I made. And it's just a tumbler that turns, the oysters go through the machine, and the right size comes out the other end, and the smaller ones fall through. So it's counting and grading all at the same time.
Oh, okay.
And pruning them. Yeah. So we've done some oyster tours where I can show people that. Like I took Aaron from Avenue out there, just to give chefs an idea of what's going on with their food and how we're handling them. And if you haven't been out there to see how they're growing, it's kind of interesting.
That sounds actually very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll take you out you can go on the Comox charter. They take people out there. And
so this charter thing, is that an ongoing tour or something new? I haven't heard about it before.
It is new. I think it's Comox Charters, and I can't remember the owner's name, but he'll stop at the farm once a month, and you can have a look at our farm. And it's just to get people out to see the farm, because I don't get a chance very often to do tours or anything because I'm so busy. It's a really great way for people to see the farm in a mm-hmm. safe way.
Mm-hmm.
And so they get to stop for half an hour and talk to me in person, get to see the everything, you know. I got a generator going and I'm lifting things and doing stuff. You get to see everything in action, and then I stop and you can ask questions, and then they get to eat oysters on the way back with the chef. So usually I take one chef
mm-hmm.
and they can cook some clams or something up on the way home.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it's pretty fun.
Yeah, that's a good value added to the farming industry of these tours.
Yeah, and it's really important to get people to get excited about local food.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And when people see your stuff on the menu, they can tell all their friends that they were there, right? So they can mm-hmm. share that story with them. And yeah, that's great. I guess the farm cycle tour isn't something you guys really can participate in.
No.
It's kind of difficult to get there.
Well, it's very challenging being an oyster farmer because you don't really fit into any, really, you know, you're not a land farmer, and people can't get to you on the ocean all the time. So you're kind of left out. You're not a winery, so you can't show up and have a tour. And, so it's very challenging to figure out a way to get people to see you at the farm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
So where are some places we can get your oysters?
Basically, French Creek Seafoods and Pantlatch are Salish Seafoods are the two seafood. Oh, and there's the Buckley Bay Seafood Shop. Those are the three places that you can get them yourself and just order them.
All right.
And take them home. But our main business is just direct through restaurants, so you'd have to order them on the menu.
Okay. So you deliver to quite a few restaurants around Vancouver Island and British Columbia?
Yeah, our main focus when Holly and I started, like during the Olympics, is our farm is 100 miles within, like a bird's, I guess.
As the crow flies?
As the crow flies, right. So it's 100 miles to Victoria, to Whistler, and to Vancouver and Victoria. So we decided to really focus on, selling local and see what would happen. And And we were amazed at the, you know, a lot of people recognize our name now locally, and the support is overwhelmingly positive. We're selling more than we'd ever think we could locally.
Really?
So we're, yeah, we can't keep up to the demand.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a good problem to have.
It is a very, very good problem to have.
Yeah.
So you're just distributing them yourselves, is that?
Yeah. Part of the challenge of being an oyster farmer is, for me personally, is to get enough value per dozen to make a living. And so it was very challenging at the beginning to make enough to get by as a farmer. So that was the decision we made during the Olympics. Was we decided that we were going to do it ourselves, and it was a huge risk at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But it was well worth the risk, I think.
Well, because you're up against a lot of larger companies that are...
Well, it's also easy to sell to the larger wholesalers.
Right.
Because there's such a huge demand for oysters. But we wanted to try and sell locally, as locally as we could, and we weren't sure if the support was there. But we're happily surprised that there was a big demand locally as well as globally for oysters.
Do you find the shellfish community in the Comox Valley a very tight group, or is it easy to work with everyone around here? Like, because we do have quite a few different oyster companies, and so I guess there's a bit of competition.
Yeah, typically oyster farmers do not get along with one another. So... that's because, yeah, obviously you're, in direct competition with another farmer. So, but if something were to happen, negatively, we'd all help each other. So there's still that camaraderie, but, we're all directly competing for the same, restaurants.
Right.
Yeah.
So some of your oysters are a little bit different than you'd say some of the other companies around?
I'm not sure what everybody else is doing. We concentrate on growing a really small oyster.
Right.
So we tumble them in our tumbler, and we try to sell them at about 2 to 3 inches, which is a really high quality product for a chef. They're easier to shuck and to get the best value. We have a really small farm as well, so you don't want to, you know, if I was a bigger company, I could grow larger oysters, but I need a higher turnover with a smaller farm, so it makes sense for me to grow smaller oysters.
Right. How long does it take to grow a 3-inch size oyster?
It still takes Holly and I 2 years to get our money back, so that's the rotation. The cycle is about 2 years.
Right. Yeah. So you buy your seed as... What size are they when you buy them as seed? They're millimeters.
You try and buy them the size of your thumbnail.
Okay.
And you can grow an oyster. If you get them that size in the early spring, you can actually sell them by winter.
Oh, wow.
So one growing season. But it takes a year to get them the size of your thumbnail. So that's 2 years.
Oh, I see. Sure.
So you buy them from a seed? Is that...
I would like to, but the seed is getting very difficult to purchase. So all farmers are having the same issue, which is seed security for your farm.
Right.
So the bigger your farm is, the more seed you need, and the smaller farmers are left with none. So I'm scrambling to solve that problem for our farm.
Right. Yeah, that's been an ongoing issue for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the seed has been coming from Washington State. Is that right?
Yeah, and Washington's seeing a lot of issues with the seed. All along North America's coastline, there's been upwells of bad ocean water.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think some of the hatcheries are having issues with growing larvae at the very early stages.
Mm-hmm.
Once they get to the size that I like to buy them, there's no problems that we are aware of. But
right.
at the smaller stages, it's really getting more and more complicated to grow oysters.
Agile.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to say, like, so water clarity, I mean, that must be an important thing for you.
Yeah, water quality is my number one concern. So Holly and I are stewards of the environment. Locally, we've had fundraisers 3 consecutive years. We've done sold-out dinners at the Fannie Bay Hall to support water quality issues, and we've done... We've participated in things that the Deep Bay Fill Station's doing to help with water quality, just get the awareness out there that it's really important that people that live in the valley understand how important water quality is to the oyster farmers mm-hmm. and shellfish industry in general.
And to us too.
Yeah, and it works. Like, I think that's the positive spin off what I do. That's what I... enjoy getting up in the morning because I know I'm helping everyone with that mm-hmm. issue.
That's wonderful. Yeah, no, I was just thinking that's, you know, we do have, it's a beautiful area out there and it's nice and calm other than when you have your odd storms, I guess, like a few years back.
You wouldn't want to come out with me in the winter time.
Gets a little rough out there.
It takes a certain kind of person to want to get up when it's snowing and it's tides are at 4 in the morning and you have to pick oysters. It's definitely a challenge.
Yes.
So most of your work is done by tides, is that correct?
Like getting out there? Well, no, I have a couple different leases that I don't have to always worry about tides.
Okay.
But my life is insanely complicated with watching for tides, watching for weather, making sure my kids get to school on time as the tides change every week. There's different, you know, I got so many things to think about, and then I have all the chefs to call every week, and yeah, as soon as I get up, I'm busy.
Yeah, I remember those days and going in at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning during the summer to unload a boat, and then in the winter, the boat would be in at 8 o'clock in the morning, but it would be snowing sideways and windy. And
yeah, you have to get her done.
The boat was going no matter what.
That's right.
Yeah, I can't believe some of the weather that the boat drivers were out in. It just boggled my mind.
Yeah. Wear a life jacket.
Yeah, with a skiff absolutely loaded with product too, like barely clearing the gunnels and
yeah.
it comes.
So I guess one of the other big things right now is that oysters get affected by red tide and that.
Right.
Is that, I mean, like right now you're shut down some of your leases right now? Is that?
Yeah, it's not from red tide though. There's Vibrio counts are really high, which is from my understanding, I'm not totally clear on this, but once the water reaches 15 degrees or above, the bacteria, just like leaving meat out, starts to get out of control. It's no different than leaving meat on a counter. So you have 4 hours, and then you have to cook it or, you know, whatever. So what happens with oysters is in their natural environment, it's totally out of control above that temperature. And so we can't harvest until nature brings everything back below 15 degrees. That's Vibrio.
Mm-hmm. Vibrio.
So our beaches are closed because at low tide, they get really hot.
Right.
But our raft lease is open right now, just opened last week, because we can keep everything really deep.
Okay.
So the temperature, we can control it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So I guess that sort of slows things down a little bit for you over the summer?
Yeah, which is okay because I need the break. Mm-hmm. We were just in Banfield last week with the kids, which was great. It's the first time I ever been. I was amazed. It's really nice up there.
Mm, great. Yeah, Vibrio is always a challenge. What about red tide? Is that that doesn't happen every year, does it?
No, red tide. Typically, if red tide comes through an area, you'll be closed for a month.
Right.
So you need 2 weeks of clear tests before you can reopen your farm. So I think we had Red Tide last year here, and this year we were closed for Red Tide for a couple weeks.
Oh, were you?
Okay. Yeah. That was like a month ago.
Right. Yeah, it's sort of random. The Vibrio's a little more, you can almost gauge it by the weather, but the Red Tide seems more random.
That's right.
So do you do a lot of testing?
Yeah, weekly. There's weekly tests that the government does, and we take our tests in, get it. You have to keep everything safe. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we're talking about when you're buying oysters, they're usually tagged, right?
Right, yeah. So chefs have to keep their tags so that everybody can track it back to the farm, so that if there is ever an issue, the chefs will have it on hand for 90 days,
mm-hmm.
typically. So Canada is one of the most highly regulated places, or industry is really highly regulated, so that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very safe to eat oysters locally.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I find that with all shellfish, and I've had a few times some asked for the tags, and it's not from product that I've had or whatever. It's been a recall has been done.
Yeah, and a recall, typically what happens with shellfish is you'll send the stuff out, and it'll be on trucks before you find out that it's above, you know, it's Red Tide in your area, and so you have to recall it all back,
mm-hmm.
which is very expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I always find it's quite interesting in the restaurant, because I will get like half a dozen phone calls from, I use several distributors, so they all phone me, and then the health board will phone me. And it seems like everyone's like, as soon as there's any issue, everyone's instantly on top of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's quite interesting. And mm-hmm. and they're just wanting to make sure, I guess, everyone's safe, because I guess it is a delicate product to work with. And to enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your favorite way to eat oysters?
I think it's still raw in the wintertime when the oyster meat's really crisp. There's nothing better. I don't think anything compares to like a really good oyster in the winter.
Agreed.
I'd say November.
Yeah.
Would November. Be the best time, yeah.
Yeah. We did that once. I think that was the first menu we ever wrote together.
That's right, yeah.
It was days back at the Kingfisher Inn, and we decided we used to do Schnitzel Madness, and we did a Chicken Madness or something like that for a month. So we thought, why don't we do an Oyster Madness, you know? And I think it was February.
January. Yeah.
We did a month of oysters.
Yeah. And it was
a lot of hoops. We did in 12 different ways or something.
Yeah. The chef said, go for it. If you want to do it, do it. So we sat at the bar one night and came up with the menu. It was pretty funny.
Yeah.
18 years old. Creating a menu for the whole restaurant.
Awesome.
Yeah. Good. So what challenges are you facing in the shellfish industry beyond just, you know, sourcing seed?
Seed is definitely the biggest challenge. There's all kinds of challenges. Where do you begin? It's kind of a David versus Goliath story.
Mm-hmm.
That's my life.
Yeah.
So, but I'm always up for the challenge. So whatever comes my way, I just think of it in a positive outlook and just do my best.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's so many challenges. I don't know where to begin.
Yeah. Anytime you're dealing with Mother Nature is.
Yeah, Mother Nature is not nice sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, that Stanley Park incident, the one that really, you know, that I remember clearly, the day that you wouldn't want to be a farmer. I was literally crying on the news because they were trying to film me, and I was in shock because mm-hmm. everything was just, it would be like seeing your house being blown apart by a tornado or something. I was just still in shock, but I wanted to see how the beach, how it did in the really bad storm. So I took the Demon Ferry, and I couldn't even get to it because there was old growth over it. You know, every 6 feet, there was another tree over the power lines.
Oh, geez.
And so I'm it's still windy, and I'm trying to get through there with a work truck and with a chainsaw. And And yeah, it just wasn't good.
No. Wow. Devastation. Yeah. I think I remember seeing rafts floating up Green Sound after that storm.
Yeah. But we, none of the farmers like seeing stuff float around. So we do try and our best to pick it all up when that happens. So we do have a team that goes out and grabs all the debris, which is a big issue.
Right.
It's one of the biggest negative things about our business is all the debris that ends up on the beaches and stuff. So
yeah,
2 times a year we try and like when it's really windy, especially, is go out and pick all that stuff up.
Mm.
Yeah. So what are some of your plans for the future?
What part of the business you want to know? I mean, there's so many different pieces to the puzzle that I'm building. Like I have a nursery right now that I'm growing seed, and I hope to employ someone full time doing just seed.
Oh yeah.
I'm also trying to employ, my whole mission is just to create sustainable employment in general. That's my mission statement. But, so I have a seed part of my business that's really important. Then I would like 2 full-time farmers that could do all the labor out on the water and on the beach, and then a driver and a secretary would be probably be nice.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to make it all happen is the challenge mm-hmm. for me.
So the goal is to expand a little bit.
Well, my goal is to have enough cash flow to be able to stand back and watch it happen without me actually having to do the work. So I'm probably 10 years away from that, and that's my retirement goal.
Right. Great.
So, yeah, that's all I can do, really. Mm-hmm. If I succeed doing oysters, Holly and I want to do things, anything that would help increase sustainability in the valley, like electric bikes, electric car sharing, you know, just keep doing anything that reduces our carbon footprint.
Mm-hmm. You need to create a market for starfish.
Yeah. starfish and crabs are not my friends.
No. Bane of all shellfish farmers.
Yeah. So what happens with our oysters that we grow on the rafts is if you put them directly on the beach, within 24 hours, 80% of your product will be eaten by crabs and starfish.
Really?
So you have to be very careful when you're transferring any oysters from the raft. It's like candy to them. So
right.
Either have to put it up really high on the beach so that they don't go up that high, or just don't put it on the beach at all and leave them in the rafts, because on the rafts you don't have those predators.
Right.
Or create a fence or something to slow them down. But mm-hmm. yeah, it can be, it comes in waves too. Like the crabs aren't always there.
Mm.
So they show up, it's seasonal.
Oh, okay.
So you'll see, you know, like usually when it gets cooler, like closer to a fall,
mm-hmm.
you'll see hordes of crabs wanting to come in, and you know, they're looking for something to eat.
Oh yeah.
So it's definitely seasonal, but the starfish are always there.
Yeah.
You just got to chuck them back deeper.
Yeah. Try again, pal.
Yeah. At least they walk slowly so you can chuck them back out.
Yeah. Yeah, crabs are pretty fast movers.
Yeah.
I think you get into those nice soft shells really easy. Good. All right, Greg. Well, thanks for coming in. I don't know if you have anything else to add to our conversation.
Yeah, I think that's it.
All right. So, look for your product locally at the places you mentioned, and look for it at restaurants here and other places in
within the 100 miles.
100 miles of Tacoma Valley. Great. Thanks, Greg.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Thanks for listening to the Edible Valley Podcast. We gratefully accept donations to help with the operating costs of the podcast or local ingredients to create new dishes in the Edible Valley Test Kitchen. Check out our website, ediblevalley.com. Like us on Facebook and follow our Twitter feed at Edible Valley. email us with your comments or guests you would like to hear on the show. Don't hesitate to send along your cooking questions for John, to answer on the show, or to pick our brain on other local food information. Edible Valley at gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and remember, keep it local.